So hello and welcome to this digital connectivity podcast in association with Cluttons. Very exciting, great topic to be discussing, something we've been discussing a lot this year and continuing to do so. So I'm joined today by John Gravett, Head of Telecoms at Cluttons, and Chris Early, Estates Manager at Telefonica. How are you both?
Very good, thanks. Very good.
I suppose I should introduce myself too. I'm Emily Wright, the Tech Editor of EG. We've talked about digital connectivity, as I say, a lot this year. It's something that, when it comes to the tech side of what property is up to, it seems to be the thing that people can really get their heads around, can really grasp. And I wonder whether that's because it's something that's actually very personal to people, connectivity, whether it's digital or otherwise. So, John, can I just start with you on that? What is it about connectivity that is just so important to the way we live our lives now?
It's just the way we do our personal lives. It's what we as consumers, and that's what we remember, are we're consumers with these devices. That's what we use. That's what we use to communicate, do all our emails, Facebook, Instagram, everything happens on it. And we're taking that now into our commercial environment. Key issue is making sure that our built environment is ready to take on board the demands of the customers. And it's taking away that landlord tenant, like I mentioned before, and making it landlord consumer basis and actually listening to what we need and what we want.
Chris, what are your thoughts on that same question? Connectivity and digital connectivity is so far up at the top of people's agendas, isn't it?
It is. And I think the first thing to remember is, although we're here talking about digital connectivity, it's better to think about it as connectivity full stop. You can look, for example, at trends in the office sector, large vacancy rates in certain types of property, out-of-town sites versus in-town. Clearly, first and foremost, people want good connectivity. They want good connectivity for their people to come in and out, and that's their staff, but it's also their visitors, contractors, partners they're working with. They want effective centres that they can operate from. And then on top of that, they need the digital connectivity to go with it to make sure those buildings can function properly.
That's a great point. And I'd like to stick to that point for a minute, if that's okay. This idea of, we talk about digital connectivity, but that to get there, we really need to look at connectivity first and foremost. So from your perspective, Chris, and how does that connectivity best form a foundation to then build the digital side of it on top?
Well, they've got to have a building in the right place, haven't they? And if you've got a building that's in completely the wrong location and you're trying to adapt it, obviously that's quite problematic. However, if you look again, going back to the example of the office park, you'll see that the better office parks, even the older ones, are reinventing themselves, strengthening transport links and adding additional amenity onto site, shared amenity, event space, coffee shops, etc., etc. So there are things you can do. And there are clearly things you can do with digital connectivity. And that's at a level of introducing fixed connectivity and enabling tenants to bring in their own fixed connectivity, both for initial connections and resilience, but also ensuring that when necessary, working with the mobile network operators to ensure you've got right coverage and capacity. And in the past, there's been a lot of focus on coverage. I don't think landlords have always understood that the capacity is absolutely as key as the coverage.
And do you think that that understanding of capacity is actually now being taken a bit more notice of as people are realising how important it is?
A little bit. There's still a lot of lip service. I was recently involved in the Office Agent Society Awards and scrutinising a number of submissions and visiting a large number of buildings. And it's clear there is a bit of a step change in people's approach, and they know this is key up the agenda, and they're keen to raise it and talk about it. But when you start prying into the detail, there's often not that much substance there.
John, would you agree with that?
I was going to say exactly those words, because you talk about how do you get connectivity rather than digital. Well, first of all, we've got to treat it like a utility, like I've mentioned on previous sessions here. We've really got to do that to understand. So when you understand a building, what electricity has got, what's the backup resilience when they're building a data centre, you look at all the different facets you need for that. You need to do the same for any commercial space now, or any space, residential as well, which includes what connectivity is, what way leads you can get, what cables you can get in the ground. Is there multiple providers there, not just Openreach? So actually you can start building that understanding and knowledge of base data, because then that is where you overlay the extras. That's where you put your wireless on top and everything else. So you need that one foundation to start with. And we're not treating it with enough depth and knowledge at this early stage in the process.
And also it's not just a one-stop activity. It doesn't just hand over. I think in the past landlords have thought they'll sort of wrap up what they need to in their heads of terms. They'll get a lease in place in the traditional way, and then a tenant gets on and does what it has to do, and the landlord sort of disappears and they just have the usual contractual interactions during the term. But that doesn't work, as John said, it's much more complicated than that in terms of both the initial delivery, but then even the building's been selected and the tenant's moved in. During the term, they're going to need additional connectivity for resilience. They're going to need capacity upgrades. There may be other mobile and fixed issues that arise during the term, and they need to be able to respond to that in an effective way, and not, it can't just be a very contractual discussion that gets left with the managing agent that just goes through a very laborious process through solicitors and takes months to resolve.
Very interesting you mentioned that, because you look at cloud computing, that's really 5 years worth of development, cloud computing. Average lease is 5-10 years. So were the leases ready 5-10 years ago for the adaptation of what was now cloud computing, the demands on a building's resilience connectivity was? So imagine doing discussions now going forward. We've really got to be focused on it.
And landlords often, you know, we those examples you gave are good ones, John. You talk about cloud computing. I think a lot of landlords at the problem is they still see it as a bit of a dichotomy between an equipment site and an office, whereas the boundaries are not quite as simple as that these days. It's not you're necessarily hosting lots of equipment on site in a comms room in an office, but you do need excellent comms from that location back to the cloud to access all the files that you're dealing with to be able to establish high quality video conferencing streams, for example, with other sites that you've got, with other partners that you've got across the globe. So yes, definitely a lack of understanding there.
From everything you've both just said, it sounds like there's exciting times ahead, but that there is a bit of a catch-up to be done in terms of the knowledge that is required around those exciting times. So how best can the sector, landlords, or whoever it might be, equip themselves with the right information? You know, should they be looking at making different types of hires, bringing in people who can, you know, who've got the experience to be able to oversee these programs going forward? What's the solution?
We're going just quickly to follow on the... Come back to my initial point, which is thinking about connectivity, not just digital connectivity. And it's the same, John mentioned service early on. Landlords have got to be looking at the service they're providing, not just providing a building on a long institutional lease. As soon as they start thinking about that in the right way, the connectivity, the digital connectivity, that is, logically follows on. You're thinking about, you're understanding how your tenants are going to operate, what their needs are like, how they're going to interact with other people in the building and elsewhere, and build on from there. And in terms of technical knowledge, it's not necessarily that they need to or ever going to acquire a huge amount of knowledge. It's knowing who to go to when, and it's just having the right mindset so that they are willing and able to act flexibly in the right way, and not, as I said earlier, end up in this very traditional, ossified sort of contractual situation that you know we've fallen foul of so many times in the past. I mean, a good example is a building we had on an old lease and major multi-million pound upgrade. We had a high voltage, and this is difference in terms of connectivity, but power, but very similar issues. We boil it down. High voltage power upgrade took 18 months to sort out, fundamentally undermining the viability of that site, and the landlord ultimately realised the viability of the wider estate. But this is the kind of nonsense that we're still going through.
Talking about hires, you mentioned earlier, the key thing is, do we need to put education into this piece?
Yeah.
So do the institutional landlords, do the big property funds need to actually start recruiting the CTOs? I know it's been mentioned in certain research at MIPIM and other such events, where do we need to increase our education on this? We can't just park it at the FD's door or the IT director's door within these organisations, because rolling out Office 365 and managing an IT help desk is not the same as getting a building well connected and doing the strategy piece for the occupiers. Mm. So I think there's a definite knowledge gap that has occurred, and we need to somehow backfill that with some, you know, with just understanding of what's required and increasing that sort of willing to spend money and investing in this area, because you will get returns. It's just the usual thing now, which will I get the returns for investing in that sort of resource level? And that's the usual, you know, issue that we have in any business environment.
And I think the other thing there is, I've concentrated so far a lot on the fairly traditional lease structure and the problems inherent in that. But of course, what we're seeing in the market at the moment is a gradual move to a more flexible mode of providing space, and even more pressure. I mean, you can see the pent-up demand. We look at how easily WeWork fills space, and WeWork's just one example of a different type of delivering space. But clearly, that's where the market's headed, certainly for a large chunk of it. I'm not saying all of it, but the people want a lot more flexibility. They want a sense of destination and community. They want services provided for them. They don't necessarily have to scale up and scale down in their own organisations to even provide, say, the facilities management and all the rest of the IT So landlords that want to succeed in that space and don't just want to be competing in a shrinking pool of traditional institutionalized leasing space are going to need to develop exactly the sort of mindset and skills that John's talking about.
And when it comes to that mindset, have you both noticed a shift? And we've asked lots of people from all different parts of both the property and the tech sectors over the last, 24 plus months, whether they're seeing that shift. And, it's good news that more and more people are seeing it. But that's in terms of tech more widely. But when it comes to digital connectivity and indeed connectivity full stop, we talk about the shift, we say how important it is. I think most landlords would realise that a change needs to happen, but the big step is actually making that change. So yeah. What are you noticing? John, can I start with you?
I've noticed there's definitely a lot more dialogue around it. There's a lot more appreciation for it. So yes, it is changing. I've been doing this the last, 18 months, championing these sort of points about connectivity. And you definitely feel that it's changing, but we're at the very infancy of it. We've got senior management talking, we've got all these people talking, which is brilliant, and we've got these events, and we've got industry talking about it, but it's not fed through to the education beast we just discussed, and that is the important factor. So we're at the very beginnings of that curve, and we just need to keep moving, because everyone talks about the lovely aspects of app applications and how we can get voice activation for property management, smart buildings, how we can do all these wonderful things. But we can't do that without the utility behind it to deliver it. So we're sort of running before we can walk from that perspective. So we need through that knowledge gap quite quickly over the next 24 months so we can catch up and deliver the lovely innovation that we all talk about. And we probably enjoy talking more about than actually this, the back office physical infrastructure.
Mm. And we are still struggling with the basics around that physical infrastructure, aren't we? I mean, how... way leaves to bring us back onto a sort of pet subject. How often are we still arguing about way leaves just to get the basic connectivity into a building? You go to a landlord and say, talk about connectivity, and they'll say, oh, it's all right, there's a BT duct in the basement. Well, as John said, that's all well and good, but what about other providers? What about diversity? But also, just to get from that BT duct up to, say, a comms room on the fourth floor, whatever it is, via all the various conduits and ducts and risers, you're going to need a way leave. And is there a standard form way leave? Probably not. And there's probably just an argument from scratch from both BT's point of view and from the landlord, starting with each of their standard forms and trying to crash something together. Mm. And usually having an argument with a tenant and trying to rope it in to as a third party to indemnify the landlord.
Mm. So, Chris, what would you say? I mean, this is going to put you on the spot. Apologies. But what would you say is in your opinion, the most important thing that has to happen to get communication and for that those kind of discussions and dialogues to either be a thing of the past or just be a lot more straightforward?
I think one of the crucial things is as simple as with the initial negotiations and the heads of terms, making sure that that's paramount. If we're talking about an individual building here, so that comes down to the agents being properly educated and building in sufficient detail and making sure that that is a substantive negotiating point. You're just not negotiating about rent and rent-free and term and all the usual stuff, which is obviously very good and essential, but you're making clear at the outset that this is a factor, and a factor over which building's going to be chosen as early as that. So it's only by doing that and really sort of pushing it that people are going to be convinced to change their ways.
And when it comes to the value of a building, an asset or a portfolio, I think that, well, from what we've seen anyway, that now more than ever before, the connectivity plays a major part in how valuable it is seen. Do you see that only getting more and more important in terms of what people are looking for, both whether it's the tenant, whether it's an investor, whoever it might be? How far up the list of priorities is connectivity coming now when it comes to assets?
Clutton's did some research, which obviously was mentioned at LREF, and obviously now connectivity is fourth on the list. So, we have the location, transport and rent, and then connectivity, which is a massive shift from 4 years ago.
And arguably location and transport are all part of the connectivity full stop.
Which, as I was going to say, is the journey to, will those key issues, will there be issues going forward? It will be rent and connectivity, because location will be, well, if I'm connected and the staff are going to be okay in those locations, we can sort it out.
The other thing
is it's going to be a real driver.
As flexibility increases, terms get shorter even in the more traditional arrangements. It'll be less easy for landlords to just sit back and say, it's okay, we've got someone on the hook for 10 years and they've got some initial connection. They're going to need to make sure that people are satisfied and want to remain in that place, and then it's suitably connected or able to be connected for any future use.
But connected also, but I think we've got to look at it from the location in terms of the building connectivity, but then how that links with the public realm. Because I go back to consumer, a individual working in a building wants to walk out of the tube station, train station, whatever it is, and walk on there doing their device, taking pictures, whatever they're communicating on, and walk into a building on you know, well connected, and sit down at their desk and carry on. That's what we want. So if I was a CEO looking at a business saying, I actually want to find a location, I would want to make sure, linking with the HR teams, actually, that that's exactly what I've got. I've got a building that is well connected and within a location that is well connected to give the staff the well-being, the wellness that they want when they're going to and from the office environment.
I mean, that's absolutely key. And putting my Telefonica hat back on now, or O2 hat, rather than just your standard tenant, that's obviously something we've got very much in mind. You know, and we will go to landlords and we will do coverage checks if we're acquiring an office building. And we may even be saying to the landlord, we've got to put a site on the building or in the building. But, you know, that's not just us anymore. I mean, everyone's got those requirements. As John said, even if it's down to amenity for their staff in terms of their personal devices, but people are using, carrying out all sorts of daily work over cellular or mobile devices, aren't they? They're not necessarily using laptops or desktops plugged into a fixed line connection. So they need to be able to ensure that they can walk around, move around the space, using data, undertaking voice calls and going in and out of the building at the same time and not dropping that call.
I mean, in terms of sort of drilling down into what it is that people want, what it is that occupiers want and what it is that tenants want and the people within those buildings, are there any trends emerging that people might be surprised about? I mean, I think the thing that you're talking about, you know, being able to stay connected is something that even if people haven't quite thought of it, would think, yeah, that is so important, particularly if you're looking at a portfolio where you could sort of wander from building to building maybe. But is there anything emerging that people might think, oh, that's interesting, I wouldn't have thought that would be near the top of the agenda?
I think, well, two things. One is that the wellness side of things, well-being, we talk about all that in offices now. It's about, you know, giving enough, you know, light and you know, the air quality and all that sort of, you know, excellent stuff that we can do now in buildings to make it a better place to work in. Well, that then flows into well-connected building, because if you get well-connected buildings, you can adjust heating, you can change pods, you can do things. You can almost take the home hive situation, place it in an office, and therefore you're creating that opportunity for the individual. So I think it's a real cross-play between the, you know, the wellness angle and the connectivity angle. And then it flows into other ones as well, which is, you know, the smarter buildings, how we can be more cost-effective, more efficient with the use of our buildings, how we communicate with the owners, consumers, etc., and the building management teams. And all that creates a better sense of wellness amongst all people, because people know what's going on. People like to be connected now. People like to know what's going on. Why is the lift out of order? Why is this happening? Why is this area of the building so hot, so cold? You know, we all get so involved with things now, and we want quick responses. So we need to use that connectivity to drive it forward. And I think that's a key aspect that people just assume, but we're not really managing.
And in terms of, is there anything that which has emerged and then sort of disappeared again? I think that in all elements of technology and digital transformation and connectivity and wherever there's an exciting move forward, there are things that come and go. Is there anything that you've noticed happening there, or are there things that, you know, that basically fall under that connectivity remit that really are here to stay?
That's an interesting one. I think some people might say that video hasn't quite ended up where it was going to be in terms of connectivity. I mean, in the early days, certainly when I think back to the early 3G trial handsets when I was working in the network side of the business, there was a lot of talk about how everyone would be moving on to video calls.
Yeah.
And clearly that hasn't happened. It's happened to a degree, certainly where, you know, you've got family, friends abroad, and people use Skype a lot. And people use Skype a lot for business. But interestingly, even within businesses, the video function doesn't always get used, sometimes to the detriment of the call. But video is still definitely there, but it's not as ubiquitous as people thought it would be for everyday calls anyway.
John, anything that springs to mind for you?
I must admit, no, not really. I think it's just, I just see more the use of connectivity to enable what we used to do, but do it in a better way, in a way that we're more common to doing it now, because everyone comes in with devices and we bring in the youth, you know, the youth into the workplace. So I think we're still doing similar things, but we're just doing them in a slightly different way. More than losing, you know, things of the past or not using aspects.
And I think, just contrary to my other point, in a way, although video hasn't taken off in some ways for the everyday call, you can look at lots of other things that have taken off that no one foresaw, and actually data traffic just continues to grow at an exponential rate. So there's a huge amount of usage that wasn't foreseen, and there's no sign of that demand dropping off.
Well, that comes back to the problem of capacity, isn't it? Because that's what we're talking about, like 5G coming on, etc. It's about capacity. You know, we're all use the words data hungry, and you know, one would say our data diet is just going through the roof. So that's the problem, is actually giving everyone the capacity so we can put all this stuff down through the pipe.
And let's talk about that then. Let's talk about future-proofing and being prepared and having that ability to be agile and flexible when it comes to what's coming next. Do you think there is enough of an understanding as to what capacity, what sort of capacity is going to be required if you want to not only be connected now, but connected in 2 years, 5 years, 10 years?
From my perspective, I don't think we know. That's the problem with the future. You don't know what's out there. And all we know is we've got this 5-year technology. And in the property industry, we haven't got the knowledge of what that really means technically. What does it mean in terms of gigahertz, bandwidth, all that sort of lovely stuff that we hear the range engineers talk about? From our point of view, it's about, well, we know it's going to deliver extra capacity. It's going to enable us to be more effective on the connectivity piece. So we just need to listen to what we need to do, which is, have we got the right infrastructure? Have we got enough cabling left in the space? Have we got the right fibre connections into the building? And are we leaving enough space for DAS solutions, in building solutions and rooftop solutions? And are we therefore working with the infrastructure providers to enable that to happen? So let's leave the knowledge of the actual technical aspect behind. It's about, well, are we actually facilitating access to our building for these things to be placed in there, which is in our control. It's in our gift to give plant room, roof space room. That's in the property industry's gift to sort out.
Do you think there's enough of a, I keep asking, is there enough of an understanding about things? But it's, you know, it's, I think that's the nature of this conversation, actually. Do you think there's enough of an understanding that when it comes to the real estate sector's role in this, that, you know, going back to that sort of those basic, this is within your control elements of it, is actually the stuff that they should be focusing on, rather than getting too worried then about, well, have we got X, Y, and Z, and sort of gazing too far into the future and missing what they can be doing now?
They definitely are. That's exactly what we're doing, but it's the comfort zone. You know, when you're challenging and doing things in a different way, people get nervous, people just, you know, retrench back into the usual habits. And, you know, as I say, we're getting much better communication now amongst the industry. We're talking about it, you know, at events, etc. But do the people on the ground doing the work, so that sort of middle layer, actually understand it in the detail they need to? No, they don't. And that's where we need to get the knowledge gap in there to make them enact on what they are capable of doing.
I think it tends to be quite late, doesn't it? It tends to be, you know, with a big enough scheme, at some point in the process, there will be discussion about in-building coverage. You know, for instance, if it's a big Westfield-style shopping centre, whatever, and they're going to think, well, we know we've got a problem here. We've got to make sure we've got everything in place to make sure people have got good mobile coverage capacity. And they will then engage with the operators, and someone will take a lead, and there'll be a multi-operator DAS system. But I just wonder how many of those conversations are going on outside of that very specific example, and how early, because in fact, it, as John said, it's allowing space for cables, it's allowing space for it's allowing the physical connectivity to the building and the shared equipment room for the radio equipment to be housed in. But it also goes, in fact, back even further and look at the fabric being used to build the building, because a lot of buildings aren't that radio friendly. So, you know, it could come back even a step further to thinking about how you design and construct the building in the first place, if you're really going to do it right.
And do you think there needs to potentially be kind of a more of a connection between all the players involved in this? You're talking about getting these conversations happening early. You know, we're talking about buildings and maybe portfolios, but what about looking at things from sort of a citywide, or even, you know, overseas? I think in America, there's sort of statewide sort of strategies in place to try and make sure that everyone's on the same page, and that if things, you know, if certain things are being built, then they are, or you know, things being dug for various tunnels or whatever there might be, that there are people thinking, well, hang on a minute, if we're doing this now, maybe we should be thinking about what else this could be used for. Do there need to be more conversations with more players?
Well, it's a classic British infrastructure discussion, isn't it? It tends to be more incremental, doesn't it? But absolutely.
Yeah, we should be. We should be sensible. You know, why dig up a road five times when we can dig it up once, put down the five cables, wherever it is, and do it? You know, we don't do that coordination. We don't bring that together, because obviously we very much focus it on, well, it's the private sector to go and deliver the solution. We'll just give you the regulation by which to go and do that. And then you get that separation. Then you get the five operators or infrastructure providers doing it in their own time when their investment comes into it. So Exactly, as you're saying there, Emily, we need to actually work far more wisely with what we've got, more effectively. And then, you know, we've got a target now by DCMS of 2033 for everyone to be connected fibre-wise. Well, that could be accelerated if we try and work collaboratively between all the infrastructure providers.
I feel a campaign coming on.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, you know, we've talked in the past to sort of various different players, all of whom are going to need to work together, or hopefully work together, to have the best result when it comes to connectivity and digital connectivity. And what I wasn't expecting is there's actually, you know, the property sector doesn't necessarily have a very good name itself in terms of how helpful it's being and how forthcoming it's been. And I think it's so important that we're having these types of discussions to kind of really look into those issues and try and understand whether that's fair and why it is that there is that reputation.
That's why I mentioned the agent. I mean, that's key, isn't it? I've complained a bit about landlords, so sorry to the landlords, but it's certainly not all the landlords.
It's everyone.
It's just a problem with the sector. As John said, it's partly human nature. People are in the comfort zone, used to doing what they're doing in the same old way, waiting for the pipeline to come back on, as they like to say. But yes, it's absolutely having those early discussions, and therefore it's essential that the advisors are well enough versed in all of this and asking the right questions at the right time.
I mean, I suppose at least when it comes to connectivity and digital connectivity, there is a real, as we, this is going back to what we first started talking about at the beginning, there's a real personal connection. Oh, well, pun intended. But there's sort of a personal connection there. And I've said this before. It's one of my favourite sayings that, you know, if you really want to get to know someone, put them on a slow internet connection. At least there is that sort of driving force, hopefully, behind connectivity, and that it's in everybody's best interests, and it's so visible how important it is. And, you know, the days of, you know, trying to have a meeting and do a PowerPoint presentation where the Wi-Fi is terrible and, you know, everything sort of slightly falls apart at that point of the meeting, and avoiding all of that and creating assets where the only way is up in terms of connectivity. Do you see that as sort of, you know, driving things forward, or is that really just, you know, the tip of a much bigger iceberg?
I think the dynamics change, doesn't it? I mean, I just remember when I was working in network rollouts, you know, there would always be a difference of opinion locally when you were trying to install a cell site or what most people call a mobile mast, and there'd be a bit of debate in the locality. These days, looking at this more of a distance, but the debate seems to have changed much more towards people focusing on lack of coverage. Mm. Whereas maybe back in the day, it was more about the aesthetic impact. So clearly, you know, people are demanding more in terms of connectivity now across the board.
And that plays in. I mean, you look at a commercial building or an occupier, 90% of their cost is people cost. You know, it's keeping the people happy, keeping them in an ability where they can deliver what they need to do on their day-to-day, you know, job basis. So connectivity is a key player in that. Whether they work flexibly, whether they work from home, they have to work remotely, they have to have that right infrastructure. So it plays in the residential to the commercial play, that we've got to make sure our built environment is ready for this, the way we work and the way we want to move around and be agile.
And let's talk a bit about 5G. I mean, I think that it might be that to people that are really embedded in the world of digital connectivity, they're thinking, oh God, everybody always wants to talk about 5G. Is that the topic of the moment, or is that distracting people from other stuff that they should be focusing on?
I think there's always a danger that you just hold on for the next iteration of a technology, isn't there? I mean, there are some great potential benefits to 5G, without a doubt. Not least in terms of the capacity that we keep harping on about. But the issues that we've talked about to date still ring true and still apply. You know, there's the fundamental issues around getting connectivity in place. Yes, 5G is going to add all sorts of functionality. It's going to add to our ability to deliver capacity, et cetera, et cetera. But we're still going to have to solve these other problems to make the full benefit of that. And in fact, coming back to what we've just said about people's demands, whether it be in or out of work, the demands are only going to increase, so the pressure is still going to be there. Absolutely.
Do you have anything to add on that, John?
Fully agree. I mean, 5G is going to be an enabler, I simply say for capacity reasons. It's going to give us the capacity we want to stream as we do on our devices now at a much better rate, and hopefully when we're on the move on transport links. So I think that's the key aspect that we're going to get out of 5G. But it goes back to, you know, are we going to allow operators to change the infrastructure on the rooftop? Are we going to allow them to have more space in basements? Are we going to allow them to do things? Or are we going to be, you know, entrenched in the old way of not until you do this, not until you do that? So, you know, if you want your asset value to improve, which is my view, and the research we've done shows that actually an asset value can improve by better connectivity, don't fight the infrastructure. embrace the infrastructure and enable you to have a better asset with less vacant possession, with better rental demands, because you're well connected.
There you go. There's everything anyone needs to know right there.
Exactly. And if you're looking to create a destination as a landlord, because you know people can now work in all sorts of different locations. So they've got to justify having an office or working a shared office or whatever it might be. They've got to justify that property cost and commitment. You've got to make that attractive. And actually, you know, it might turn out that they've got just as good connectivity as they have in your building, or it might be worse in your building, where they're, you know, where there are various other impediments and they're sharing connectivity with other people. So that is, it's not going to go away.
And let's talk a little bit about London. We're sat in an office in London, and it's an amazing city. But London has actually also been criticised in the past for not necessarily being where it needs to be in terms of connectivity compared to other cities, sort of capital cities and large cities around the world. Do you both think that's fair from your experience?
Yes, it is. It is fair. I mean, we are lacking behind, but that's probably because we were first out in the 1920s rolling out, you know, the copper network that we have now. Mm. And therefore, others who are later behind, they managed to see what we've done and change the avenues, and they've benefited from that. And now they're accelerating. So we now have to completely change things. I mentioned what we said earlier, work collaboratively, try and get the infrastructure providers digging up one trench and changing all in one go. And we've got City Fibre doing great work rolling out the new fibre to the premises networks at the moment. But, you know, we need to make sure we're working across all providers in the industry.
Chris, would you agree with that?
I don't think I can add much to that, to be honest. No, I mean, there clearly are still frustrations. It's funny how location dependent things are, even in a city. So, you know, you can have some people who say that they've got perfectly good connectivity, and others seemingly around the corner haven't. So there's clearly still work to do.
Saw on the news, I know BBC News yesterday, it was actually that England or UK have slipped further behind on broadband. We've slipped back further from 31st to 35th, and we're now 25th in terms of European countries. So actually, we're slipping behind further at the present time. So it shows we've got to really change things to go faster for sort of for 5G, etc.
And, you know, we're talking about the commercial side of things here, but, you know, in a world where people are streaming more and more as well, you know, people, I think I was speaking to someone the other day, marketing a residential building, saying, well, we're not putting TVs in anymore because everybody's streaming everything and using their laptops. You know, that broadband connection is more important than ever. I mean, obviously it's important in the workplace, it's not all about Netflix, but, you know, people being able to live their lives, I think, feel very much like broadband is such a key part of it.
I mean, that's one side, you know, where mobile is definitely filling a gap, and where there has been, or there have been rather, shortcomings in the physical connectivity in the UK, people have started to rely more and more on mobile connectivity. And I can think of examples where, you know, recently we've had a subtenant, they couldn't get the BT Wayleaf sorted out, and they've been operating off a shared 4G connection for some time, and actually it wasn't ideal. They had a relatively small number of people initially, and they had enough capacity on that connection to do it. Now, a few years ago, you couldn't have done that. So clearly, all the investment by the network operators, the mobile network operators, and on 3 and 4G has paid off in that regard.
Mm. And in terms of the future then, do you think we're, I mean, again, maybe this is putting you on the spot a bit, but I'm interested to know whether you think we will see more occupiers sort of targeting specific buildings, assets and areas based on the connectivity that's already existing, or whether we will, and then maybe hopefully this is the preferable option, see the sort of the industry and the providers sort of taking responsibility for making sure, where possible, that that no longer needs to be an issue, and that the connectivity or the infrastructure for the connectivity is rolled out so that everywhere is an attractive location.
I think, to be honest, the latter will be the first one. It will be led by those who are, you know, entrepreneurial on this aspect, look at it, deal with it, invest in it, and then they'll reap the rewards thereafter. The people who lag behind will get there eventually, but they'll be slow on the uptake, and they won't get the short-term benefits.
Chris, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, commercial property is a bit of a super tanker, so it's slow to turn around. I think John's right.
So you think it's just, you know, one of those things that we're just going to have to watch it as it slowly kind of, you know, follows the path and hope it ends up in the right place, which I'm sure it will.
We're going to have to keep chipping away, aren't we? We're going to have to keep persuading and keep working, which is, you know, what this conversation is all about.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's been great, and I think that we've sort of touched on some really key issues. If you were going to sort of round up with a few sort of messages for people to listen to, is there anything that you feel that we we would definitely want to get out to the people listening in terms of next steps or anything that the industry could do that's actually relatively straightforward that maybe they haven't quite thought about yet.
I think from my perspective, it's simply try and improve some of the knowledge gap across the breadth of the organisation to make sure top to bottom know more what it means to be well connected and that it's a utility more than just a cash cow for infrastructure we place on a building. And then on top of that, just to make sure that just work within what you know. So you know your building, you know how you can liberate space to be available for connectivity, for building usage. Just work within the knowledge and within your comfort zone of what you've got, but don't fight it.
Mm. Chris, what about you? What are your thoughts?
In keeping with my surname, I'd say start early and make sure you think about these things, as I said earlier, as soon as possible in the development of a building. And also consider it's not a binary thing. It's not either there or it's not, as we've said earlier. It's about ensuring that you're thinking about this at all stages of the building's life, because the requirements will change and you need to be able to adapt.
And finally, and it seems bizarre to end on the word failure, but I'm going to, because a lot when we talk about technology, and we've talked about this, I think, John, in the past, about the importance of embracing failure, or rather, the more positive spin on the word failure, which is, when it comes to entrepreneurship and innovation, you have to try and try and try and things don't always work out. Is that relevant to this part of the sector, and how comfortable do you think people are at not getting it right every time, but at least moving forward in a direction?
People don't like it naturally, but it is one you've got to just take on board. You won't get it right first time. There'll always be, technology is to a degree so bespoke. Every occupier will want something slightly different, so you're never going to get it right. You just have to listen, try and adapt to what you're hearing. You may not get it right first time, but you've got to just keep going, keep adapting, so you can get to the end goal. Little things like way leaves you should get right first time, because we shouldn't be shooting ourselves in the foot by not negotiating a standard way leave. That's just ridiculous. But the rest of it, in terms of how you get a building ready for the wider in building solutions and how it interplays with the public realm, it's more difficult. So you just have to try solutions and learn from weather errors and from other parties through collaboration.
And Chris, failure to be embraced?
Well, absolutely, yes. You've got to try things and you've got to move on. And clearly, as I said, with the way the market's changing, the office market's changing, people have got to start experimenting a bit. They can't just wait to see how things pan out for everyone else if they want to compete in these fast-growing areas of the market. Absolutely.
Great. Thank you both so much for joining me here today. I think that it's been a brilliant combination of really delving into some of the key issues, a few home truths that I'm sure people need to hear, and also some inspiration as well, and some reassurance around the power of failure, which we're all for, because innovation is based on that. But thank you both so much for joining me, John and Chris.
Thank you very much, Emily.
Thank you.